is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. I'm a Chester County author who has written about the Battle of Brandywine, Gettysburg, Chester County towns, and people, including our own Jim Herr. If you have a question and would like to call in, please do so. The number here at WCHE is 610-701-7243, and we'll see if we can, 9243. And we'll see if we can answer your questions. Today, I have two really special guests, and the subject is on the Battle of the Brandywine and also the upcoming Chads Ford Days this weekend. That's put on by the Chads Ford Historical Society. And my two special guests are, from the Battle of the Brandywine, General George Washington and Colonel Alexander Hamilton. And welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, Colonel. Colonel, we're going to start with the General because he does outrank you. General, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about the importance of the Battle of the Brandywine?
Well, of course, you could call it a turning point in the cause, in that it tested the Army once again, the first major test being at Long Island the year before, where we were outflanked by the British, and then again at Brandywine. But the interesting thing is, at Brandywine, the Army was in very high spirits at the end of the day because they had acquitted themselves very well. But of course, we had been outflanked, and which would not happen again. The idea was to prevent the British from taking the capital, Philadelphia, which they did eventually march into on the 26th of September.
General, can you tell us a little bit, you picked the position, I believe, at Brandywine. Why did you think this was a strong defensive position?
Well, because we were along the Brandywine River, or creek, if you will, on the opposite side that the British would be coming from, and it seemed a good position to protect the city.
Very good. Now, let's give Colonel Hamilton a little bit of the questions here. And I was wondering, Colonel, it's September the 11th, 1777, very important day. September 11th has gotten really deep into our history since then. But can you tell us a little bit, what were your duties that day and what did you do?
Well, I came to the attention of the general after the Battle of Princeton earlier that year, and I became his aide-de-camp, Lieutenant Colonel, raised from the rank of captain. I was pleased and honored to be aide-de-camp to General Washington, and I performed numerous tasks which aided him in his daily activities, sending out requisitions, writing letters, ordering supplies, dealing with other officers, making sure that the movements of the troops were at the correct time and at the correct place. I certainly accomplished all of these and much more for the general, and he was very forthright in giving me instructions as to what he needed on a daily, even hourly basis. I assisted him very adequately and honestly in all of those activities, and I was proud to do so.
Colonel, it sounds like you had a really hectic day on September the 11th. Were you there behind the defense of the Brandywine, going up and down with the general?
I was with General Washington the entire time. The general had sent out some reconnaissance parties, although there not a lot of reconnaissance was done at Brandywine. We were in the area and trying to discern what place along the Brandywine would most likely be crossed by the British. We did not know where that could be, as there were several fords in the area. So we did travel a bit throughout the area. However, not an extensive reconnaissance was ever accomplished at that specific site. And some have criticized our efforts because of that.
General, the Colonel Hamilton here has brought up reconnaissance, and one of the main issues, I think, about the day of the Battle of the Brandywine was the information you received or misinformation that you received, including information from some of the locals right before the battle that I think helped you devise your defensive plan. Can you comment on what information you received, what was good, what was bad, and how it impacted the battle?
Well, the British actually had a much better time of it there because they had loyalists leading them to the various points and helping them navigate the terrain. I was totally reliant on other officers, such as a Major Spears, I believe, that was to bring information back up through channels to me. And the distances involved from one point to another, when he would inspect an area and there would be no British there, between that time and when he'd go to the other area, the British would show up. We had no good ground reconnaissance at Brandywine, which was a lesson learned. It would eventually lead to my establishing what's known as a Fabian policy in the war. I basically had a part-time army fighting British regulars. The average enlistment was 6 months. Takes a soldier at least 6 months to get to navigate everything there is about being a soldier, when we'd have to be training new enlistees all the time. In a Fabian policy, which of course comes from Roman history, a general Fabius Maximus, who was fighting Hannibal from Carthage over a period of years, he developed a policy of attack and withdrawal rather than engage the enemy fully on their terms in order to wear the army down, which would take a period of years to win a war that way, which of course is what happened. Until we would be in a position with an army with full strength, a professional army facing the British, which wouldn't happen until Yorktown. That would be only the next time that I would face the British toe-to-toe, so to speak, in a full frontal assault. So for many years, I embraced the Fabian tactic, which was criticized by many in Congress, as it was criticized of General Fabius centuries before.
You're listening today to Living History on WCHE. I'm your guest host, Bruce Mowdy, filling in for Gene Pizzali. And if you have any questions for my special guests, General Washington, Colonel Hamilton, the call-in line is 610-701-9243. General, I've read reports from some of your staff officers that you were fairly upset around noontime or late morning that you couldn't really get a great read on where the British Army was, and at one point you even contemplated of leaving your defensive positions and cross the Brandywine. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah. What kind of stopped you from doing that?
None of the other generals thought it a good idea, for one thing, that I would take the field myself and put the whole cause at risk.
There was abundance of caution that they did that. Colonel Hamilton, were you involved in any of those discussions, or what were your feelings during that day?
I was present there when it was discussed. I had previously considered the so-called Fabian strategy up before Brandywine, and in fact knew that some officers had various plans and various strategies of their own for going into battle. None was finally agreed to until much later, and as the general did mention, that this event was the first time that our general and the two major commanding British officers, Howe and Cornwallis, were on the same field of battle, literally toe-to-toe, directly facing each other, with full armies in the cause, as we say. And there were many strategies, many different opinions, but in the end, I believe the general made the correct decision.
Of course, we're talking today about the Battle of the Brandywine, and upcoming this Saturday and Sunday, we have Chads Ford Days, where the Chads Ford Historical Society really remembers what's going on. Saturday, the event is held from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Sunday from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. I believe the first Chads Ford Day actually took place way back in 1958. General, will you be attending either one of those days, and will you be speaking to those who show up?
I will be there on Sunday the 11th, where at 12 noon I will give a talk at Chads Ford.
Always interesting, and you get a chance to talk to the public, and the public can talk to you, and I'm sure they always have some interesting questions for you. And Colonel, I understand you will not be at Chads Ford this year, and you will do some, I'm sure you'll be doing someplace other. You're listening to Living History. We have about a minute left in the show. When we come back, we'll tell you a little bit more about what's happening, and then we'll have some more great questions about the Battle of the Brandywine and the American Revolution for Colonel Hamilton and, of course, General Washington. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back with you with the rest of the show.
Do you have a wedding, graduation, baptism, confirmation, milestone, or birthday to plan? You need John Surratt Catering, one of the most highly rated and preferred caterers throughout the Philadelphia area. They will be there to create and cater your event while assisting as much or as little as you desire. Planning a decadent, over-the-top company gala? Need help transforming your backyard into the party of the year? Want to wow your clients with a delicious luncheon? Then you need John Surratt Catering. All you have to do is call, and they'll handle the rest. Located at 835 Lincoln Avenue in Westchester, visit them at SurrockCatering.com or call 610-640-2836. That's 610-640-2836.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini Services, Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties, with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer, 610-873-1696.
This is the talk of Chester County, 1520 WCHE.
And welcome back to Living History. Your guest show co-host here, I guess, pinch-hitting for Gene Pascali, and I'm Bruce Mowdy. We're talking today about the Battle of Brandywine with General George Washington and Colonel Alexander Hamilton. We're going to get back to them in a little, in just a moment, before I forget and before I get in trouble with somebody close to Colonel Hamilton. I'm going to fill you in a little bit on Chads Ford Days. That's coming up this Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, it's from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. That's a little bit later than usual. And Sunday, it's from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. It costs $10 for an adult, and children and CHS members are free. It's always a great day. They have great food. I'm told they have bands this year. There'll be reenactors from the 1st Delaware Regiment and the 2nd Pennsylvania Regiment, over more than 50 crafters, colonial demonstrators, antique cars. There'll be lots of stuff for the kids. There'll be some dog training, course obstacles, and hay rides, and as I said, food vendors, and a very special chance to tour the John Chads house, and they have fresh baked bread done in the colonial style that I always take more than one with me. So if you get a chance, come out to Chad's 4 days, and I will be there with some of my books, and including the one on the Battle of the Brandywine and my latest one on Pickett Sturge from Gettysburg. So please join us if you can. Let's get back to the Battle of Brandywine. And General, what was the importance? What was the big takeaway from the battle, from your aspect as General of the Army?
I don't know that there's one big takeaway, but one which I had previously mentioned, I had decided as a result of that engagement to not confront the British in the traditional style and risk losing the army. As long as I could keep the army in the field and wear the British down, which I knew would take a period of years, we could possibly win our freedom. And so I adopted the Fabian policy, which essentially is interfering with supply lines, and in that case, guerrilla tactics would work, the interrupting the normal flow of how the British would operate as much as possible, but not risking the whole army in doing so. And so until we could build the army to an extent where it could stay in the field as a full-time army, men who were serving a lot longer than 6 months, and until we could get a foreign ally, which we did, that could assist us in defeating the British, because we had no navy to speak of, and they had a navy, and that gave them a very strong advantage, a navy and a professional army. Of course, the French eventually did join us. We could definitely have not defeated the British at Yorktown, Virginia, several years later, if it wasn't for the French navy.
General, you mentioned that foreign help that we received in the French and the French Navy. This was the first battle, I believe, for a young French general by the name of Lafayette. Could you tell us about your relationship with Lafayette and what happened with him there at Brandywine?
Well, when I first met Lafayette, the last thing I wanted to see was another young French ne'er-do-well. He was 19 years old. He was made a major general by the Congress. Coincidentally, he brought a ship with over 1 million livres worth of supplies and donated the ship and the military supplies to the cause. He was very much enamored with the cause and with myself. The Marquis soon proved himself a truly dedicated supporter of the cause. He and I developed what could rightly be thought of as a father and son relationship, which remained throughout my lifetime.
Colonel Hamilton, we had General Lafayette there. There was also other famous Americans, or would become famous Americans. We had John Marshall there and a lot of other people. Did you have any interactions with him? And generally, what were your thoughts on Lafayette?
Thank you, sir. This was a very important occasion, September 11, 1777. This was the first time that General Washington, I, and the Marquis de Lafayette were on the battlefield at the same time. It's the first occasion for us to be on the battlefield fighting or serving together. Another aide-de-camp was John Lawrence, an extremely capable man, extremely intelligent, who was with us as another aide-de-camp, part of the team, as the general said, part of the family, which was quite important to the cause, because the general needed closeness, integrity, honesty, a family to make the cause work, to serve him well. And I was part of that family. I was honored and blessed to be part of that.
Very good. General, did you know you had such famous Americans in the making as John Marshall on your team?
Of course, he was a young officer at the time. All of the officers on headquarters staff, what I generally refer to as pen men, these were young men who were devoted to the concepts that we were fighting for, number one. And number two, they were extremely intelligent. All were well-educated. They were great writers, Colonel Hamilton especially, and eventually, of course, he would be included in my administration. Colonel Lawrence, that he mentioned, his father, Henry, was in the Congress, was a member of the Congress, and was president of Congress at one time. Colonel Lawrence, unfortunately, would be killed in a senseless action after the Battle of Yorktown that he got killed at a bridge in South Carolina. His was a great loss to America. But all of the young men, which there were 20-some, that were on my staff, were very bright people.
Colonel Hamilton, can you add anything to that?
Thank you, General. It is imperative to mention that the Marquis de Lafayette and John Lawrence were two of the finest gentlemen who I have met who have ever walked this earth. Both extremely talented, quite intelligent, and of the highest caliber. The Marquis de Lafayette volunteered to serve a cause that was not only uncertain, it wasn't even his own. He fought for American independence. Of course, being from France, he had no reason to come over here other than the concept that he supported, which was freedom and liberty. We honor him for that.
General Washington, you were cited rightfully so for your valor at Brandywine. I believe your troops first faced the Ferguson rifle that Captain Ferguson from Great Britain invented, the British version of the breech-loading rifle, and supposedly did a fairly good number on some of your troops. There's a story that hasn't really been verified if it was you or another high-ranking American officer that might have come in those gun sights of Patrick Ferguson. Do you have, even though the horse I was described sounded like your horse, do you have any recollection of what happened late in the morning at the Brandywine?
Well, of course, I never encountered the alleged Captain Ferguson. I was doing reconnaissance along the river along with some other senior officers, and to include General Lafayette. So whether a Captain Ferguson ever had me in his sights, but did not take a shot, I have no knowledge of.
General, when you received word that indeed the Cornwallis and Howe had outflanked you and they were up on Osborne Hill, could you give us your immediate reaction, and what were your first orders?
Immediate reaction was dismay. I won't say shock, but not, but unexpected, because I felt that those assigned to checking farther upstream along the Brandywine, and the information I was getting was that there were no British there until we had a local gentleman by name of Squire Cheney arrive and inform me that indeed there were British there and it was a large force. General Lafayette hightailed it off to the right flank to engage the enemy. Indeed, he rallied the troops on that side to stand fast, and that's where he was wounded in the leg. I had my own personal physician, Dr. Craik, as a matter of fact, tend to him and to take care of him as though he were my own son. That's where a bond really began to form.
Colonel Hamilton, were you there at that point, see Lafayette go out? And I think another American general, General Greene, also did a great job up on the hill across from Osborne Hill and at Sandy Hollow.
That is correct, sir. I was near General Washington for the entire battle. I want to make clear that by early in the afternoon, it was obvious that the first report of the day that the British were coming from the north was the correct one. It was the second report which caused confusion and consternation among the troops and within the aide-de-camp and the family serving the general. But when we received word that there was a large force up to the north, it became clear that the original intelligence that we received was actually correct. Had we acted on that and attacked Kniphausen, who was attacking from the west with a much smaller force, it is conceivable that we would have overwhelmed him and perhaps even had a better position for the battle later in the day. Of course, that will never be determined, but that is the thinking that came afterwards.
I think you're correct that Kniphausen had about half of the British Army and the other half were with Howe and Cornwallis. General, the retreat back to Chester area was done in good order, and didn't you give a famous report back to the Continental Congress and kind of saying that the troops are still in good spirits?
Yes, the troops were in very good spirits, and as a matter of fact, on the 11th of this month, next Sunday, I will read that letter at a ceremony at Brandywine Battlefield at 6 o'clock.
That is great. I think we're coming up. We have about a minute or so left in the show, and I want to thank my very special guests today, and they, of course, are General George Washington and Colonel Alexander Hamilton.
It has been a privilege and an honor serving with you, sir.
He's running out to Broadway as we speak and finish up this show today. I want to remind everybody we have the Chad's 4 Days coming up soon, Saturday and Sunday, at the Chad's Ford Historical Society. And again, I am your guest host, Bruce Mowdy. You can find out about me and my books at www.mowdy.com. And Gene will be back right here next Wednesday, September the 14th at 1 p.m. And his guest will be Alexandra Kirtley, curator of the Philadelphia Museum of Art. And thank you all for listening to Living History.